Your Twitter is suspended for a month
this
now.
This is Izzy Gutierrez. I'm yes, this is my Instapot behind us, if you want to look at that. Because I understand that pot roast is a big point of discussion here on the internet now. What's going on with that, Cass?
Shout out Instapot, man. If this were I'd say Instapot over, can you even see this? No, wrong way. Over air fryer. If we were to do like a
versus
a list, yeah, I think Instapot beats out air fryer. Can I use the air fryer more?
I didn't know we were doing kitchen scenes today. I'm sorry.
What the Instant Pot delivers outweighs what the air fryer delivers. What is your
open
handle,
Izzy?
Over
here. Izzy Gutierrez, would you like a PS5?
Welcome to Debatable. I've literally almost said welcome to Highly Questionable because we were just talking about that and we're in the kitchen. Welcome to Debatable. What is it Pablo calls it? Fake internet TV show? I don't really know what those nomenclatures are, but I do have to ask you, why is everybody talking about pot roast on the internet? Like, I don't know why.
I don't know either, because pot roast is bomb.
I think somebody was trying to slam the idea of that being a good dinner to come home to. And I think that's ridiculous because pot roast is amazing.
Let me ask you this, though. How often, if y'all as pot roast enthusiasts, how often are you mixing in pot roast to the rotation? Is that a once a week thing? Is that a once a month thing? Is it a special occasions thing?
To me, it's a little too much effort to do it right. So it's more like a once a season thing. Maybe 3 or 4 times a year if I'm lucky.
See, this is what I'm saying. Pot roast is... Go ahead.
No, Clay, I just find it really odd because right now is peak pot roast season. I mean, it is February. It is peak pot roast season. And you guys are going to come with the pot roast slander February 8th? Like, you know, out of spite, I'm going to make some pot roast today.
I don't know. I can't think of a time where I ever, like, pot roast exists in the world. It's like there, but I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say, I'd really love a pot roast, or man, you remember that pot roast that Betty made last week? Like, I've never heard anybody actually discussing it. It's just kind of always around, and I've never made it, and my mom didn't make it either. Neither did my dad. So.
I mean, I wish it was around right
now. Two Americans. Like, is that what they mean by that?
What's the first topic, Alabaster?
All right, first topic from someone who almost definitely does not eat pot roast.
No way.
Do Tom Brady's comments make you think he could actually come out of retirement?
Okay, so TB12, Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, the GOAT, whatever you want to call him. He retired a while back and instantly got his news cycle jammed up by the fact that he was A, scooped, and B, other news came about, and therefore the window of time that we talk about the greatness and the legacy was slammed shut. So, as a result of this, of course, he needed to put himself back in the headlines, and he said, quote, I'm just going to take things as they come. I don't know how I'll feel 6 months from now. Okay, now there's two things to be gleaned from this. Never say never is the other thing that he said. There's two things to be gleaned from this, one of which I already stated, Izzy. The other of which is to take this seriously. Are you taking this seriously from our resident Florida expert on the program?
I wore my most island-like shirt for you, Clinton.
Island boys! Yes.
Look, I appreciate Tom Brady for, you know, having a podcast that he needs to put, you know, good information and good content on even after he announced his retirement. But I mean, this is what everybody says, but I don't believe it for a second, because let's just play this out, okay? How's he going to feel 6 months from now? Well, I believe that's August, which is
older.
During training camp, is it not?
Yeah.
Right? And so for these 6 months, he's not just going to be sitting around waiting to see what he feels like. If he's going to play NFL football, he's got to prepare for NFL football for the next however, or, you know, probably take one week off to go to the Derby, right? And then the rest of the time training and see how he feels come August when he is in great shape. So, and if that were to happen, you know, we'd know ahead of time. So I would say the one thing that made me question the whole idea, or for that weekend while the story was just kind of floating in midair, nobody was confirming it, if you will, it made me wonder if he could change his mind. Not necessarily for a spite season, but just because it's the worst possible time to make that decision right after you get done with your season. But I think enough time's passed where he's not changing his mind. 6 months from now, that's definitely not going the opposite direction.
Cass?
I mean, let's just say this first. I don't believe him. I don't think he's coming back. But I will say that I have sympathy for the struggle he's going through. Like, I have a pair of pants in my closet right now that I wore in high school because it's like I don't want to get rid of it because I feel like maybe, just maybe, I could fit back in them one day. So, like, I can't really – I have that issue. Tom Brady's trying to say goodbye to basically his whole first life. So I get that. But he is stringing the game along right now, you know, as he's searching for his next options. Like, you're too old, Brady, to be playing these games. Communicate clearly what you want, because I will say this, you don't want the game to break up with you. Like, you're too old to have the game break up with you. It just won't be that pretty. So if you come back and you're waiting, you're like, you're just keeping the game as an option right now and creating like this confusing situation with the game. You don't want it to break up with you at 59 years old. You just don't want that.
That was very insightful on a lot of levels, well beyond football. Alabaster put up a tremendous piece of a stat work here. Brady in his 20s, 21,564 yards and 147 touchdowns. Brady in his 40s, 22,938 yards and 168 TDs. We get it. The production has been there. But I think to Cass's point, this is like, do you remember when Jay-Z said he retired, but then like put out one song a year for like the next 5 years just to kind of like hang around? And it was always like, what's actually happening here? Your point about situationships is exactly right. Because honestly, like real talk, Izzy, my concern always was with Tom Brady was that one day he was going to get knocked down and just not get back up. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to have to see that happen. I mean, not because I have some big
Jay-Z's
standard
in my mind. Jay-Z's not
getting
hit in the head multiple times.
Right. You know what I'm saying? But like, I don't have some big standard in my head of Tom Brady as some big hero. I just mean for his personal health. You know what I'm saying? There could just be that one day, Izzy, where if you're right, if you're not preparing for 6 months, you're not trying to catch Aaron Donald, you know what I mean, in the ribs.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you can't walk for a week. You know,
and what does that have to look like? Because, like, look, this idea that you retire and then all of a sudden you're sitting at home hanging out with your kids the entire time, for somebody like Tom Brady, who's just going to be pulled in a million different directions, regardless of whether he's playing or not, it's kind of nonsense. Like, the one thing that I could see him saying, maybe changing his mind after, let's say, a month and saying, hey, I'm not really getting to spend time with my kids. I'm not really getting to spend time with my wife. I'm flying all over the place. I might as well just, if I'm going to be away from them, might as well go ahead and play football again and find the right team, the right situation. But the idea that he can just sort of parachute in onto a team, not even in the season. I'm talking even before the season when he has had no say in any sort of personnel and any sort of offense. Like that, for a control freak like Tom Brady, seems absolutely implausible, unless it's one of those two teams that he is super familiar with, Tampa and New England. But are they going to be in great positions where he's going to swoop in and say, hey, let's go win a Super Bowl this year? No.
I feel like Tom Brady's the one guy that's got, like, you know how people say, oh, I'm going to go home and I'm going to play with my kids. Like, I feel like he could go home and play with his kids and have a full workout regimen that might actually keep him in shape while he does that. He's got his kids doing one thing. He makes sure he's actually getting his exercise in while they play. He could have a whole system like that. He's the one guy that's just anal enough that actually both things might actually be able to happen. That's just me.
It kind of reminds me, though, if you remember – sorry, Cassidy. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Izzy. You're on a roll.
I was just to remember, I was going to make a Friends reference, which is probably going to make Clinton angry.
I've never seen that show. Sorry.
You've
like
never
not
seen
once?
It.
You didn't like stumble upon it on
once
TBS?
Again, let me explain this. I'm a black person from a black city with two black parents. We did not watch that show. It just wasn't a thing that mattered to me. I mean, that's just, what do you want me to say? Sorry.
Hey, well, I'm not going to make the reference in because I already
this is a separate discussion, but like people always ask me that, like, how is that possible? I'm like, I just watch other stuff. It's okay. You know?
No, I'm not saying that you needed to be a loyal person and like ask for the Rachel haircut in middle school. I just wanted to know, I mean, you hadn't seen an episode. Like,
I mean, it's been
not
on.
Even just
I
curious at this.
I couldn't
all
name
these people...
you. I couldn't name you all the characters on the show. Not even close.
Okay, but that's different than like, you know, choosing to one day watch one episode or, you know,
living
one section of an episode.
Is the show
that
it's hard to disprove that, but
too.
I don't really believe you. Like, I believe you could have named all
I can
six
name
if you really
the
tried,
actors.
But we're not going to do that to people. We're not going to do that to
I
people
I can't name
here.
The characters is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
No, but you're proud of that, which is fine.
It's fine, yeah. living single. I stole the idea. I'm still mad. What's up, Alabaster?
Oh, okay. Well,
you see what I'm saying, guys? As the,
it's a as big, the that's Gunther a bigger conversation.
Show, I do have a question.
What's up?
What about the 49ers? Why can't he just parachute into the 49ers and win a championship next year? Trey Lance probably won't be ready.
It's not a bad idea. Is he's from that area? I mean, that would be sort of the that would be the full homecoming if that happened. I don't hate that idea.
Yeah.
I don't hate that idea. Like,
I just wonder, like, what you're going to so if he retires, like, what do you talk about? Like, when you're done, like, if you've got these kids that are, you know, in their age of, like, you know, range of, like, 7 to 14, like, I don't, it's nowhere near as cool as my dad used to be a football player and my dad's retired. Like, just talk about the things that are just happening currently. And I think that, like, that to me, it feels like it would just be boring to just have him around. Like, why have him around if he's not going to be a special dad? You know what
I'm
saying?
It's not about the, like, if the he's just gonna be a retired day just dad. Hanging out with dad. It's about the fact that, like, playing football is a very dangerous thing to do, especially right. when you have huge, like, muscle-bound men running at you trying to knock you down every 2 seconds. Like I said, this is 2 weeks ago on the
show. I'm going to take my chances. Odds are he'll be fine. He's been fine this whole time except for that 1 year. I think his kids will be like, eh.
And then, but then 10 years from now, is he going to be fine? That's. It's not about, like, a broken leg.
He's literally getting younger, Cassidy.
Okay. I'm glad you got I'm glad that you became Tom Brady's doctor.
Hold on one second.
Overnight.
What's up, Alabaster?
Izzy, did you just really imagine Benjamin Brady being like, "Dad, you're kind of boring now. Go be the goat or get out of this household."
Yes.
Yeah, really, I mean, how much really does he thought? Really remember? I mean, the guy's been playing forever. He's won Super Bowls forever since before they can remember. Like, yeah, I think it's got to build more in the, you know, I think it's more, it's boring. It's boring.
He has three kids. There's a lot of like recitals.
Yeah, a lot of life to live.
Practices. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, I'm sure he'll be happy to see his dad drive him to his whatever, like, flute lesson. And the kids, like,
you really
you know,
think that's happening?
Yes.
Like, there's got to be a whole security team wherever Tom Brady goes. Like, it's going
doesn't.
To be a disaster for him to just show up at a soccer game.
I don't think he's living that kind of life with his kids.
No,
I
don't
really
either.
Don't. Yeah, that's.
I don't
he's,
either.
He's rich enough where you don't have to have that anymore because all the other people you're around are mega rich as
right.
well. So you don't need that. You know what I'm saying? That's how he's operating. What's next?
Awesome. Next topic. We're moving on to NBA news, and our question is. What does the C.J. McCollum trade mean for both the Blazers and the Pelicans?
Okay. For those of you on transaction Twitter, I mean, pardon me, but this must be the greatest day of your life because two quasi-relevant teams, not really, with two stars that people know, are trading 19,000 people between various teams with players that don't exist. Cass, I'm going to you first. Please explain to me why.
Come on, you don't know Didi Luzada?
Yeah, it is kind of strange. Usually you see teams like in different places, like in standings, kind of improve their separate situation, like one trying to get better, one trying to tank, but they're basically like bordering each other in the standings. So first of all, pour one out to the great CJ and Dame backcourt that just wasn't good enough. And, you know, it was a fun ride, but it seems like this trade was like 2 years too late to, you know, like we've been waiting for this to happen. I'm still digesting the actual trade. As far as on the Pelican side, you know, everything begins and ends with Zion. And we're still waiting for Zion to begin his damn season. So they wanted a veteran guard. He's the actual president of the Players Association. So he has leadership qualities. Random fact, me and CJ McCollum had the same birthday, so Virgo vibes. Nothing has anything to do with that, but but I will say the Pelicans, they started 1-12 to start this season, and now they're in like playing game contention. Willie Green, beloved by all. Now he has a guy in CJ, you know, who will buy in. We'll see. Like I said, it begins and ends with Zion. Zion, B.I., CJ, okay.
I guess.
Blazer side, Damian Lillard.
This trade to me, Cassidy, had a lot of like initially had a lot of like Frontier and Spirit Airlines merging kind of energy.
Yes, it was just
okay, they're in the game, but are they really in the game? And so, but then it's a sort of trade that just makes you look a little closer, right? And the one thing, the most shocking thing I read today, and I don't know if it's just because, like, you know, early morning trade, I don't know if it was that early, but the Pelicans, with the idea of being in playoff contention, it just like immediately made me like open like a newspaper and just like make sure that that was correct. Like they're in the contention for a play-in spot. Yeah. And it just goes to show you how top heavy the Western Conference is, because, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is just kind of a mess. But it's just, it's wow. It's eye-opening. It's also eye-opening that you have an interim GM basically in Portland doing this fire sale over here, because it seemed like they're getting rid of a lot of people. And maybe Dame Lillard is next, which is super interesting. It also makes you look at the numbers of Josh Hart and CJ McCollum. Efficiency-wise, CJ McCollum's not going to give you, you know, 49-50% shooting the way Josh Hart is. But obviously, as a guard that can create, a guard that can score up to 23 points a game, I don't think you think of Josh Hart that way. Can McCollum do that for you? Yeah. Has he been sort of misplaced next to Damian Lillard? Should he be a lead guard that can do more with a guy like Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson in front of him? All great questions. And so all things that you have to sort of look a little deeper in this trade. Now, of course, it all comes down to Zion. Can Zion be a part of a big three if he can't actually play? I don't know. But, I mean, obviously
no,
not.
That team
but
is
with
still
him
Zion.
And Brandon Ingram
that team is,
and McCollum.
Is Zion.
Pretty good trio.
Yeah, that team is. Can you put the list of players that made the exchange up? Can you put that list up again? The total amount of humans that are in the transaction here, plus the picks. Where are the picks coming from? I don't understand. If you're moving this many people, why do you need to throw in extra players that do not exist? I saw this and all of a sudden, like, my whole feed started going crazy. Oh, this, that, a third. Don't cheat the grind. All this other stuff from Dame. But I mean, like, look, I'm sorry. Until one of these teams does something, wake me when this happens. Because as far as I'm concerned, this to me is a trade between guys that all maybe could be something. We don't even know yet. It's kind of sad because I feel like there's this window era of the – we talk about all the guys that didn't get rings because of Jordan. We're not going to think about all the teams that just never developed because they were either chasing the Warriors or trying to be like LeBron and just ended up being in the league for 10 years with kind of nothing to show for.
Does this make it interesting for you? If you think about the idea, you know, people floating around CJ McCollum and something else and some picks for Ben Simmons, and now all you're getting for CJ McCollum is Josh Hart and some picks. Like, do you think the
idea of
Dame Lillard to Philadelphia?
That's a piece that
right. But I'm talking big names, right? So if like, if we were talking like if Portland's going to not give away CJ McCollum but give him away for less than a superstar, right? Then you would think that maybe they'll be in the you know interested in Dame Lillard for Ben Simmons deal. Maybe this is something that gets that actually done.
You
know, maybe because you see Steve Nash now
is that basically Portland's plan, like this fire sale, is like a last-ditch effort to, you know, like tell Dame that they're doing something. They're going to reshape the roster around Dame, 21 million trade exception, potentially 60 million salary cap space this summer. I'm saying a bunch of words. I really don't understand.
Try one more multiple time. Draft right? You think picks Dame's going to be down with that?
Right.
I know he just signed the extension.
No, but they got to try what they were. He wasn't going to be down with what was currently happening with the Blazers. I will say, like, they're going to try to get a big piece. That's the thing. It's if they can get a big piece for Damian. Because right now, the Norm Powell's, Robert Covington, CJ McCollum's of the world was not enough for Damian Lillard. I do feel a little bad for Chauncey Billups because, you know, he's pretty much set up to fail right now. He is getting an advanced lesson in NBA coaching. But it is, like, right now, what they're communicating to Damian Lillard is we're trying. We're going to try to make it work. It wasn't working, getting little pieces here and there. We got to go big for you. And they're going to test his loyalty. Like, but to just decide to get rid of just everybody when you have a Damian Lillard, when that's like the type of guy that people go out to try to get is a Damian Lillard, this is what you do. You know, clear the deck.
I don't know that
I
understand that though. As to quote the great Ben Calise, what is the reason? Who are the actual players you are trying to acquire? You can't just theoretically say we're going to retool, reshape this, that, and third. Who are the actual individuals? There's only a certain amount of people in the NBA who are good. What are you actually talking about? You know what I'm saying? This is where I don't understand how you can even use the term retool at this point. You've been retooling for 10 years. What are we talking about here? You're the Blazers. Like, I don't
get it. It is a frustrating discussion because it's centered around, well, if you actually just extrapolate, it's kind of includes a Zion Williamson, a guy that you hasn't seen play all year, and if you extrapolate, like I said, a Ben Simmons, a guy who you haven't seen play all year.
Right, I'm like,
so
I don't even.
Kind of like, what's happening here?
Right. What's up, Charlie?
So, I mean, I feel like, I guess the Blazers could say they're trying to rebuild on the fly and put a star. Dame finally won out. They gave up two first-round picks to get Robert Covington a year ago. They sold low on him. They traded Gary Trent Jr., who's one of the best shooters, and a good wing for the Raptors, for Norm Powell. And they sold low on him. They gave up Larry Nance Jr., who was a stretch five, who worked with Dame. And they sold low on him with this trade. And CJ, who they could have traded for Ben Simmons a few months ago, and sold low on him.
So,
like, if you're Dame,
you
Cassidy's
have to finally
point,
this is
out,
their
right?
version of trying. This is their version of trying, and it's not great.
I didn't
he's
say
seen
they
it.
Were
like,
trying
he's seen
good.
What all these picks have turned into, and so
while,
why are they going to give him another
good.
Try?
Good's
so
better.
If I'm Dame, it's like, all right, include me in this. Just get a huge haul for me. Get me out of here because this doesn't seem to be working. The decision makers aren't making the right decisions.
That's a new motto for this show, trying good. What's next?
Yes.
All right, moving on. We got a little bit more NBA news. All right, the Lakers are playing the Bucks tonight. As we know, it's been a bit of a struggle for Russell Westbrook. And our question is, what do you expect Frank Vogel to do with Russ tonight?
I'll start here because, it's almost like if I walk outside of my window and I just open the window, I will hear Westbrook takes just by natural wind blowing around Los Angeles. This is what everybody talks about all the time. What's Russell Westbrook going to do? This, that, and the third. Here's what I think he should do. Frank Vogel on benching Westbrook in this. Hopefully the response is that the player plays better. That player. Okay.
Wait,
here's
is
what
he
I
not
think.
Even saying his name?
He won't even say the man's name. Here's what I think they should actually do, but here's what I think what will actually happen. The best case scenario for Russell Westbrook is this. You put him on the bench and you tell him you want triple doubles, but none of the categories can involve points. That's what you tell him. They better be rebounds. They better be assists. They better be blocks, and they better be steals, and that's how you're getting on the court. It's not going to be throwing up mid-range bricks. It's not going to be out of control, in transition layups that should have been dunks. It can't be that. However, what I think is going to happen is he's going to put him on the bench, and he's just going to end up trying to be the leader of whatever their second unit is, and they're going to figure out that they're not that good overall as a team. Cassidy, what do you think?
I mean, I think the focus should be Anthony Davis and LeBron James. I mean, I get it. Yeah. I get the conversation around Russell Westbrook. But I think the focus should be getting Anthony Davis back in form, which he looked pretty darn good on Saturday, and giving LeBron James moments to rest, not playing 40 minutes in his first game back from a knee issue to barely beat the Knicks. But, you know, I digress. Like, I understand that the drama and feeding into the drama of Russell Westbrook is something that is consuming this team and consuming the talk around this team, and it is a problem, okay? But I think the way that you fix this problem is focus on the guys who are going to win you a championship to begin with. And, you know, having Anthony Davis back is the key to winning a championship. Anthony Davis is going to be the key for the Lakers to win the championship. He always has been. It has not been Russell Westbrook. So what do I think that they do? I don't know. Like, I make LeBron James point guard. Make Anthony Davis the five. Like, I just think with Russ, he's a very emotional guy. And the more you feed into this talk around him and him being and his issues being so like the number one problem on this team, the more they're going to be the number one problem on this team.
Yeah.
Well, Kes, hear me out on this one, because I think part of the issue is it's Russ and his play and his position, frankly, because if you're going to say, hey, you can't have the ball in your hands as much, we need to put the ball in LeBron's hands and maybe we'll post you up or something. Well, He's also a rebounding point guard that wants to get it and rip and go. And if he's doing that, then he's got the ball in his hands. And frankly, that's probably the best scenario for them because, you know, that's a fast break situation. You don't have to settle into the half court. And so you can't just say, hey, be a complimentary player, play off the ball, and not expect him to have to take some of these shots. And I think this is where, you know, you can create excuses for Russell Westbrook. Not you, but people can create excuses for Russell Westbrook. But some of this is true. Like, he's been the guy that's been there every game. So he's been the guy that, had to make the biggest sacrifice when he started. Right. And then when had to make the biggest adjustments when LeBron's out, when AD's out, etc. And then you had the one game where he didn't play with either of them against the Hornets, and he scored 30 points in the second half, the most by a Laker since Kobe's final game. And so the answer is just, hey, well, Frank Vogel, it's not like he has other options. It's not like they're going to trade him. He's got to play him in the times where he's supposed to play him. Hope that you get the more efficient or better version of Russell Westbrook. And if it's a close game late and you're seeing the inefficient version, do what you've done. Take him out of the game.
I just don't even think the frustration is
if those end up in wins, then nobody's
going to
complain.
I think the frustration is his defense. I think the frustration is his defense and lack of trying.
Yep.
And to me, that plays into his just mercurial – did that come out right?
Mercurial. Sort of. Tough. It's a toughie.
Thank you.
It's a tongue twister for sure.
Just the essence that he is. And that's why I'm saying, like, they got to stop feeding into this. Like, I was I don't know if you guys saw post game, and maybe I'm also contributing to the problem here. When LeBron was telling Malika, you know, he was talking about accountability, and he said, it's all about taking accountability for your own actions every game. If you want to change, you have to look yourself in the mirror and demand more out of yourself, and it'll trickle down to the rest of the ball club. Maybe that he was just talking about everybody. But it was it definitely felt like pointed at Russ.
Look, defensively, Cassie, like this team's just never been together defensively. So you can't just blame Russell Westbrook.
No, I know, but I'm not saying that, but that he.
Guys, hold on.
It's the body language. It's the buy-in. And to me, that's emotions. Everyone always talks about defense being a mental thing. And the missing the backboard completely and the turnovers, like, I don't feel like Russell Westbrook has forgotten how to play basketball. I feel like he's in his own head, like Anthony Davis and LeBron James keep saying about him. So if they keep feeding into that narrative, it's only going to get it worse. Sorry, Clint.
Yeah, but it's okay. But, I mean, that's correct, except they're not the only ones. The crowd was yelling no when he put up a shot on his home court. Like, this must be addressed on a larger level. And that's like, I'm sorry, that's part of this. That's why LeBron has to say something. He wants to man in the mirror any other Michael Jackson song you want. I'm just saying that, like, you got to do something. And there's no point anymore in which we can kind of hide this behind, well, Westbrook's not really a factor. Westbrook is kind of just the third guy. He's goofing off. Malik Monk is filling in great. Yeah, he is. But again, if the people that are paying can notice it with their own eyeballs, I'm telling you, you're going to have to do something.
So what do you do?
I told you what you do. You make sure. I think you make sure. I literally think that you say, Westbrook, I want a triple-double out of you, and it doesn't involve points. That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? You might get there. You know what I mean? But you better
move
your butt.
I mean, this is, to me, it's all roster construction. Like, this is a team with one of its main guys in its prime in Anthony Davis. The other one's past his prime, although LeBron obviously is still great, but still past his prime. And you need a lot of energy around that if you're going to make up for it. And they just don't really have that, you know? Malik Monk, not enough, you know? So it's going to come down to, you know, us talking about Russell Westbrook until they're eliminated from the playoffs and seeing what his numbers is. But in the end, it's never going to be he's the main reason why this is happening. It's the entire picture.
I mean, Malik Monk is still rocking the two-level high top, you know what I'm saying, as well. That's a great look. I love that. Very throwback 90s house party style. What's up, Kravitz?
I got a question. Why? Okay, so we saw this a couple years ago with Melo when he was in Houston and they basically just sent him home. Why is it so hard to bench Russ?
I mean, I just think it's one of those things where that's where the human interaction element of what being a basketball team is. Like, just having that guy sitting on the bench is kind of difficult depending on sort of game situations. I mean, we saw this happen in the Knicks game where he came out of the game in a crucial part and he didn't even sit down. He was just standing there the entire time. And, like, I'm not saying that sort of intimidation is a factor, but I do think there's just that interpersonal part where it's hard to just sit a guy like that on the bench because the potential, it's just not easy, you know?
It's because there's no definitive answer. It's because there's nothing that says, yes, this is going to work. if we do that. Right. And then if you do that, your first instinct is going to say, okay, they're pulling the plug on this. This is probably not going to work. Let's just cross our fingers. And then if you bench him and then it doesn't work, and it's like, all right, this is the end of this. We can't – we have no hope. And if you're going to try that, you're going to try that far enough ahead of the trade deadline where you're just going to, you know, have to find something, make something happen around trade deadline, because or the second half is just going to be a disaster. So it's one of those you have to have, A, planned out the way that's going to work, but B, have something that's definitively better. And, you know, whether you say about the type of players they are, THT, Malik Monk, whomever, I don't know if there's anything that's like that you're definitely going to say, hey, this is obviously going to work. And Russell, we're just hanging on to him because of pride.
And like I said, I think given the way the season has played out with, you know, LeBron missing 17 games, AD missing 21, there's this like glimmer of hope that maybe they just need to work out kinks and play more with each other. That has gotten us to this part of like, you know, going into the season, it was like, this is not going to work. But hey, you got three future Hall of Famers, so like maybe it can work itself out. But it's been a really weird year for them and quote everybody. But I think how we're gotten to this point is the fact that they are holding on to that hope that maybe they'll figure it out by just playing with each other and the guys being healthy, because it's a lot of talent.
Forget about Carmelo, four future Hall of Famers.
Right, but we're not talking. Yes.
How about Dwight? Five?
But Carmelo.
Dwight. Ooh, oh,
Dwight. Five. Wow. How is this team losing?
It's. I'm telling you guys. It is
because they're closer to the Hall of Fame, all of them, right, than they are their peaks.
The draft.
Because yeah, they're all eligible somehow and exactly, still playing.
Yes, they're all eligible somehow and still playing.
What's that?
I think you're going to play a game of What Are the Chances?
Nice.
The game where we show you a video and you tell us the chances. The first one, though, we actually have two sound bites from Joel Embiid. The first one is after game series last year, and the next one is yesterday on radio. And our question is, what are the chances Joel Embiid didn't really call Ben Simmons out after getting knocked out of the playoffs last season?
I don't know how to say it, but I thought the turning point was just, you know, we had an open shot, and you know, we made one free throw, and we missed the other, and then they came down and scored, and we didn't get a good possession on the other end, and Trey came back and he made a three, and then from there down four, it's on me. I turn the ball over and try to, you know, make something happen from the perimeter, and. I thought that was a turning point.
Izzy, your thoughts?
Wait, don't we have another clip?
I thought so. I was just vamping in the middle.
Hard, this summer to try to improve in every facet of my game. And, you know, and I know a lot of other guys did that. You can look at the improvement, you know, Tyrese made, Tobias has made, you know, every other guy on the team. So, I think at the end of the day, you got to have some self-awareness. The notion about, like guys getting called out and, you know, whatever, I just don't see it that way. Like, you look at the comments that were made. You look at the way I spoke about it. I didn't call anybody specifically. I just said, you know, I called out a bunch of events that happened.
I mean, listen.
Did he just say the player got to play better?
Yes, exactly. But like, I'm not gonna lie. This is relitigating a case that was already far too much drama in it. I mean, look, who called out who? What was being said about potential? I think I've said this a million times. The most important of these callouts was Doc Rivers. It was not player to player. It was what Doc said. That changed everything. The rest of this stuff is just internal scuttlebutt, and I'm not changing any of my opinions. Thank you. There's the quote. Doc Rivers, after game 7 on whether or not Simmons could be a championship point guard, quote, I don't know. That is the vital, vital fulcrum of this entire situation, in my opinion. Izzy.
What if he just meant he could be a championship small forward?
Oh, see, maybe he should have used his words better.
This is the most tame, like, call out. Like, if this, okay, so we're not going to know for sure until Ben actually talks about it, but we've heard people get called out so much harder after playoff performances, etc. So that, it just feels like it can't possibly be the main reason why he is that upset with an organization, especially, like, most of the time you give that stuff a couple of days. And it'll, you know, teams will get past it or guys will get past it. You're talking about months. You're talking about another full season where Joel Embiid probably can't even, like, recreate those emotions if he wanted to because they were so far back, you know. So if that is the reason that, you know, Ben is sort of holding out, really doesn't want to ever be a part of this organization again, I think it's as Shaq said, it's a bit crybaby-ish. But I actually don't like, if you were to have just taken Joel Embiid's answer out and just replayed the game, it's the exact same thing because all he did was give you a play-by-play. And he just put, you know, when you put an eye on it, when he said I turned the ball over, but everything else was just the play. So in terms of call-outs, and then his response on the radio I thought was pretty – I think Embiid's handled this pretty darn well.
I agree. Embiid has turned into a basketball ambassador writ large, dealing with all this nonsense the whole time. He has really upped his persona, I think, in terms of what people view him like as a leader in Philly, Cassidy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he absolutely he stepped up as far as being a leader of this team. He has no choice anymore because, you know, like his running mate, his other all-star player is not there. And so I just think, like, what's the question? It's what are the chances Joel Embiid didn't really call Ben Simmons out? It depends on, like, how you describe call out. Like, you know, if you can call someone out and it also be factual. He didn't have to say that, you know, we passed up a layup. Like, some people would, you know, err on the side of, hey, like, we always get mad at players for not telling us the truth or not, like, you know, giving us, like, you know, giving us, like, player speak, coach speak. Yes, exactly.
Okay, quickly, hold on. Kravitz put up the picture of Ben Simmons passing the ball from directly under the basket. And that's what we're looking at right now. Go on, Cass.
But as far as, like, Joel saying that he is questioning whether that's the sole reason that Ben's not showing up? No, because, like, the thing is that I think everyone understands that this has been something that was brewing, and then that was the boiling point. That was that moment in the playoffs and the post-game comments afterwards. That was the moment that, like, it was a straw that broke the camel's back. Whatever cliche you want to throw at it. It was all of the trade rumors leading up to it. It was the relationship, like, so much focus on do these two get along? Like, it was building for 2 years. All the criticism that he received for, you know, his injury stuff. Like, to say that his comments are the reason why, like he's not showing up is, not understanding the whole situation.
And this is what worries me about Ben Simmons, because I remember being asked about him when he first started, and, hey, the jumper's not there. And I remember saying, like, man, look, I'm not worried about this guy. Like, his ability, he seems like he's got the right mentality. It's cool. But everything that's been a problem, he seems to go the other direction with it, or frankly, run away from it. The jumper, it didn't look this bad at the beginning. Then it looked worse, and then he just stopped taking them. Okay. This whole idea of, you know, most of these elite athletes and these, you know, top level performers, when somebody's criticizing them, said, I'll show you. Instead, he just says, you're probably right. I'm just going to go do other things. Same thing with, with this Joel Embiid stuff. Like, if he felt like Joel Embiid was calling him out, of all people to be able to go in every single day in practice and every single game to show up, like, go ahead and do that. Show him that you are the reason that this team is what it can be, or, you know, can be what it can be. And then, yeah, just literally running away from this whole situation and not being face to face with it. I think it concerns me as, you know, somebody who thought he was, you know, LeBron 2.0. And now it's just like it might just be all up here. And that's something that we don't want to put on somebody without, you know, that person giving voice to it. And so he seems to be pretty adamant that it's just, hey, it's a basketball thing. It's a personal situation. Maybe is some mental health stuff. But for the most part, we're just guessing. And we've been guessing all year, and I know a lot of people are.
When he didn't join the Australian team for the World Cup as well, when he could have, that's when I knew something was really wrong, well beyond just the Sixers. I was like, wow, you're not even doing that. You're choosing to run with your homeboys in a gym as opposed to potentially represent your country and work on a game in a different way. That told me something else was very wrong. Here's what we're going to do for my number. I'm going to say an integer that I want to know if you can write it down. This would be null set, because this isn't really like the exact qualification. It's sort of like getting an incomplete on a report card. Like, I don't really think this is what everything is involved. Do you know how to write null set?
I think
set?
You're going to get a drawing of a middle finger for your number.
No,
I'm going to go 99.9%.
It's a zero with a line through it is what it is.
I would have had no idea what that was.
You don't know what null set is? You guys didn't take math in high school? There it is.
Yes.
Null set.
Sort of. Yes. Right. Yes. There you go. More in the middle.
But... More in the middle. Right. Yeah, exactly. Izzy, what's your
By the way, that idea that Ben was mad because Joel called him out, even though he didn't call out Joel after losing to the Raptors, if you look at the numbers, there was no reason to call Joel. They were better with him on the floor than they were with Ben Simmons on the floor.
I can't believe we're still talking about that series at this point in time. Anyway.
Do you all have numbers? Why ended a lot of relationships.
Yeah, it's true.
19 million. That's how much Ben Simmons has been fined. That's my answer.
19 million.
That's the other thing. Like, you're running away from this and they're taking money from you. Like, that's a double whammy there. Like, it's just lose-lose for Ben Simmons at this point. 99.99%.
I'm not writing that down. I'm moving on.
All right. I mean, you wrote a 9 for Cassidy. You just knew you weren't going to get called out. Cassie, did you notice how he writes his nines?
This has become Izzy's whole pet project, is watching
Why? What's
Charlie.
Wrong with his nines?
He writes his nines from the bottom up, as opposed to the loop first and then down. Yeah. So it's unorthodox to say
My
that.
Nine kind of looks like a P.
I think that's the way it's supposed
to
look.
No, it doesn't.
Pushing nines. What is going on?
Real talk, I almost got held back in kindergarten because my handwriting was so bad. It was a motor skills issue. I'm moving
really?
On.
Do they even teach handwriting anymore in kindergarten?
I was precocious.
All the time we spent on cursive, and we only use it for our signatures now.
Which I don't.
You couldn't read my signature if you tried. Do you print your signature, Clint?
I was a graffiti artist, so my handwriting is generally just more stylized and block-like in general. Huh? Yeah.
That was your initial career, graffiti artist?
I mean, that was my interest in art is just a general topic in the world, came through street art, and that's what I practiced, that's what I studied, that's what I care about. Yeah, that's still like a big part of my
five
ethos.
Lives.
Yeah, it's a big part of my ethos. Like, you want me to write my name down? Here, I'll find a pen.
Yeah, I will.
Carry on. I'll be back.
I get annoyed.
Carry on. I'll be back.
I heard a comedian do a bit about this, but I definitely worked a long time in elementary and junior high on my signature, only now to have everything e-signed, and it's like, it's just really aggravating.
I mean, how long? How is your handwriting, Izzy? Because mine is terrible. Like, I always wished I had that bubble
like
handwriting, like all the other girls, but mine is like a combination of, you know, bubble handwriting and just terrible, like 10-year-old boy handwriting.
Let's see.
Charlie was so close to laying down that next topic, and then here we go on a completely terrible tangent about handwriting.
No, I'm very interested. Left. I mean, I'm actually, maybe I'm trying to get some more artwork for
Debatable.
Our new house. So,
what's the name of this show?
Oh, man.
See?
You're one of those artistic people who can make anything look good.
Yeah, I have great handwriting. End of story. Yeah.
Wait, should you be... Forget printing out these boards, Charlie. Just have Clinton send you
right?
Seriously.
A bunch of these boards.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
I wasn't lying.
Shut up, Izzy. I wasn't lying. I mean, you know, it's something I've spent a lot of time on, so therefore it's quality. That's how it works.
Right. Wait, can you put that up to the camera one more time?
Yeah. Can we just change it and make it the new logo? It looks.
I will say one qualm, you did spell debatable wrong. But
it's fine.
Yeah,
you know.
A little bit too many E's in there.
How is that?
And also looks like DeJabable, but.
Oh, whatever. Debatable. Yeah. You know. Sorry.
Yeah, debatable. All right, last topic.
You
guys.
Get the idea.
Last topic. We have another soundbite. What are the chances that OBJ is too cordial with Joe Burrow ahead of the Super Bowl?
I think if you look up cool in the dictionary, there's a picture of him in some Cartier shades. He's going to be one of the greats, I feel like.
What does too cordial mean here? What's the concern? They're label mates. You know, they went to the same school. Like, I don't know.
I see no lies either.
What's the problem? Yeah, I don't understand. Who has an issue with this, Alabaster?
If they were to play on the opposite sides of the ball and have to face each other, like if he was a DB saying this, I'd be a little concerned because, you know, those guys live on just that overdose of confidence and making sure that they don't compliment anybody. With this one, I don't really have a big, you know, I mean, it's not like he is... married to or has any sort of long relationship with any one quarterback outside of Baker. And so it's not like he's insulting anybody by saying this. And you kind of want to soften up the competition, right? You don't want to give them the old bulletin board material. Like, I don't really have a problem with this. I think I don't think anybody's disagreeing with him either. So it's probably just because it's OBJ saying this. Because, like, if who's the other receivers on there? Not Cooper Kupp, but if Higbee was saying this, I'd be like, okay.
Wouldn't think twice about it, yeah.
I mean, this is media day. Like, we're really, like, you know, the questions that are thrown. Yeah, wasn't this like a media day?
Yes, this was
it. I don't
know. Media day happened on Zoom off-site.
Exactly.
Boring.
You're doing the Super Bowl in LA. Let's not get into a COVID discussion. But I'm just saying, why not have him outside? You're having him on Zoom, but it's neither here nor there.
Well, hold on. There's a reason why. You know the reason, right? No, the reason is because the Bengals had a pep rally send-off and 30,000 people showed up at their stadium and the Bengals were there. It was amazing. You didn't see this? Yo, they filled their actual park or their actual stadium to have a send-off pep rally and like the players
were there. Are these pep rallies new?
I mean,
like, didn't the Rams have it at a high school and they didn't even fill up that high school? Like,
yeah,
stadium?
But Cincinnati hasn't been at the Super Bowl in a lifetime. You know what I'm saying? This is a kind of different matter. So, like, they showed up, then the team. I mean, I actually thought it was a pretty smart move because I'm sure a lot of those people aren't going to be able to make the game. You know what I'm saying? It was pretty cool. So
I didn't think there was very many things that I like less than a parade, but a send off. Is definitely not on my, like, I'm not going to go be like, hey, guys, let's go get wasted and say goodbye to all of the players. No, like, I'm going to save my getting wasted for the actual game.
Direct your hater
that's
rating.
That's the reason they held media day?
No, virtually? I'm saying like, I think that between the two
as a member of the media, I say that's a whole lot of BS.
I don't know, man. I thought that was a pretty cool idea for Cincinnati.
No, media day is a whole lot of BS. You never get anything good out of that thing except for, you know, random proposals from people.
I agree, but at the same time, it's like, what else are you doing? Like, you need to have content to fill up 2 weeks worth of, you know, talk about the Super Bowl. And Media Day is at least something that you can get some sort of content.
Let me explain
and
to you what's
it's hard
going
to
on.
Get out of Zoom. You know how many times I've raised my hand and I didn't even get called on?
So what's going on here is that media members are running around Los Angeles. They could not possibly care less about these two football teams until Friday at the earliest. You got shots and sets all over town that are totally unrelated and are just using the backdrop as what their content is, which is fine. That's why it's Los Angeles.
Cassidy, if you need more things to do, like, there's this one podcast that Duncan Robinson hosts. It's called The Long Shot. Speaking of Duncan Robinson, have you been noticing the heat lately?
Yesterday,
I didn't even get a chance to watch the heat game. I asked Alexa, I said, hey, Alexa, what was the Heat score today? You know what she said? Literally, she said, the Heat demolished the Washington Wizards 121-101. She said demolished. She's all in on the culture.
Ooh, that is...
Put it on a t-shirt, Clinton. Send it over. Everybody here in the debate of those desks needs one.
There we go.
Oh, hey.
Look how beautiful that is.
I think we're going to have to pixelate that. We can't get that.
I will
send
write your name.
In the mail.
I'll send it to you. Bye,
send
everybody.
It in the mail.
Will.
So I can see more of that great writing.
Follow us at Debatable. And if you're lucky, you can follow me and I might write your name too, kiddos.
Let's bring back mail and let's bring back cursive.